Today is the 1st of February 2017. I'm interviewing Jim and Betty Judd about their family in Havelock North. Jim, would you like to start off by telling us about where your family came from, where to, and so forth? Thank you.
Well, my family originally came from both England and Ireland. My father's parents and his parents came out from England on the Martha Ridgeway, which landed in Petone in 1840. And my mother came from Waterford in Ireland, and her name was Shanahan. And after the Judds landed in Petone, they then spread themselves throughout the North Island, and basically they went up through the Wairarapa, and they settled in Greytown. And all of my parents, brothers and sisters, were born there. And it was a move from Greytown through to Tarni, which is located between Paiatua and Ikitahuna. And it's on the back road through from Paiatua. You turn left and go up over the hill and then on the metal road right through the back end of it. And they had a sheep station there. And my mother, she was brought out from Ireland by some people named Hodgins, and because Charlie Hodgins' wife was critically ill, she was brought out here as a cousin, and she came out to look after or foster the children. And then of course they both met at that time. He was just down the road and Mum was at the Hodgins estate, so that was how they joined up.
When we talk about 1840, we're talking early days of Wellington history, really. There wouldn't have been too many people, too much activity around. What did your father do at that stage?
Well, he wasn't born, of course. He wasn't born at that particular time, and he was born in Greytown. My grandfather was named James Judd as well, and he married Augusta Carr, and they had quite a substantial sheep station at Tarni. And I was there through until I was about 7 years of age. I went to school in Ikitahuna by bus, and that took quite some considerable time to get both to and from school, but both my brother and I went to school in Ikitahuna. And I have some sort of great memories of Tarni. I always remember my grandfather taking me down to watch a bulldozer. And it was the first bulldozer he had ever seen as well, and he was totally fascinated by it. He spent nearly all of one day watching the bulldozer shifting earth, and it was quite amazing. And I also remember listening to the news, which was the BBC news in those days, and especially about the war, what was happening in Germany and what was happening on the Eastern Front, as it were. So I do remember those things, and I can also remember going eeling as a kid. We had a river running through the property, and they had some very big eels in it as well. So that's about where we are with that. Once we left Tarni, we went to Tokomaru, which is just outside of Palmerston North. And Dad and Mum had a dairy farm there, and they used to milk 60 cows. And it used to take them about an hour and 15 to an hour and 30 minutes to milk all of those cows, and there was all 60 of them. And I recall now, we have a friend up in Whakatane, and he had 760 cows, and it took him an hour and a half to milk those cows as well. So that was quite a sort of a...
But it's very efficient though, isn't it?
I can't recall exactly how often there was one cow stepping off the thing, but there were 60 cows up on the platform at any one time, so it was quite incredible. But Mum and Dad used to strip the cows as well after the milking, that they would still turn around and strip the cows as well. And we had a very old international truck which used to be able to take the milk cans to the factory, but a lot of people in those areas, they used what they call a horse and dray, and they used to take all their milk down to the factory with the horse and dray. And we were plagued by one thing in Tokomaru, and that was there was always stumps. The ground was actually sinking and the stumps were actually coming through the ground.
Mm.
But it was magnificent soil and it grew anything. And I can recall even with Chalmolia, grew so high that actually birds could nest in it. And it was amazing stuff.
Because that was all swamp.
That was all swamp.
An old forest was coming up.
Yeah. It's interesting that Dad also ran some sheep on the property as well. And I can recall him putting the sheep into the Chalmolia paddock. And I said to him, how on earth are they going to get at that? And he said, well, he said, you'd be quite surprised. He said, there's a certain amount of grass around the bottom of it. But there's also the fact, and I was quite amazed, because the sheep actually put their front feet onto the Chalmolia and pushed it over. Oh, they were pretty bloody bright. There was no doubt about that at all. So we went to school at Tokomaru, and the way we went to school was we had a horse and a gig, and I used to catch the horse every morning and put it into the shafts, and then I used to take my three siblings to school and also pick up the Mason kids from down the road. There was four, so there were seven of us all together, and that was our daily routine going to school.
So the school, Tokomaru is where it still is now. The school was obviously away from there, was it?
No, the school was right up in the actual township
itself.
Yes, and right opposite the town hall. But in those days, of course, they had a butcher and they had a baker and a post office and everything else. But now, of course, everything's gone. It's just the store left.
And the museum.
And the museum, the STEAM Museum, which was started up by two of my schoolmates, the Stevenson boys. It was very interesting. And from there, with my father, he developed bronchitis. Was very, very ill. And the doctor told him in the finish that he had to get out of Tokomaru because of the low-lying area and, of course, the fog and the problems that created for bronchitis. And so we then went to Taranaki, and we went to a place called Kaponga. And we had a farm up the Upper Manaia Road, and it was basically sheep.
And that's where is Kaponga?
It's in between Eltham and Opunaki, Opunaki, and around the mountain road.
Yes.
And at that time, there was dairy factories everywhere, and of course they've all gone now, the whole lot of them. And I think there was a dairy factory spaced at around about between 5 and 7 miles. There was a factory every so often. And we farmed sheep up there, and Dad in 1958 or somewhere around about there, developed polio. It was almost debilitating for him because he had one leg that wouldn't function properly, and it was then decided that we would sell the farm and move to Hawke's Bay, to Hastings, mainly because all of Mum's children that she had reared during her time as a nanny at the Hodgins place had all shifted to Hawke's Bay, to Hastings.
That's interesting, isn't it?
So she came up here and we settled in Kariri Street in Hastings. During that time, I had previously gone to Silverstream College in Wellington in the Hutt Valley. And when Dad developed polio, I had to come home and look after or help Mum on the farm. So that was one of the problems that we had at that stage. So when we moved to Hastings, I think I was 17 at that time. And I first started work with Farm Products in Hastings.
Yes.
They were quite a large distributor of butter and cheese and small goods and that sort of thing.
Yes.
And eggs. I stayed with Farm Products for, I think I must have been around about a year with Farm Products. And then I went to Taylor's Dry Cleaning and started off in the cleaning room. And after about 2 years, 3 years I think it was, maybe 2 years, I was promoted to the branch manager in Napier, off the Napier branch.
Mm.
And I ran that for about a year or 18 months. And during that time, I was an 18-year-old, 18 or just over 18, and I was conscripted into the New Zealand Army. And that straightened me out and also straightened a lot of other guys out as well. So
where did you go?
I went to Wairu. We first of all went to Linton. I trained to Linton and we got kitted out there. And then we went to Wairu, and that happened to be during May and June, and it was bitterly cold. So anyway, after I came back, Harry Taylor decided then that he was going to close the Napier branch and bring it all over to Hastings. And there was a fairly large plant in Hastings where I'd started off anyway. So that was decided, and I was then looking for another job. Well, I was given the option of going back to Hastings, but decided not to. And at that time, I decided that I was going to go into the police force. And so I went to Taranaki Street in Wellington, and I spent 18 months in Wellington. And again, I wanted to move back to Hastings and applied for a transfer back to Hastings, and I was flatly turned down because they said that they needed everybody in Wellington, and that was it as far as that was concerned. So I resigned from the police and back to Hastings, and I joined Smith & Brown. I was working as a salesperson in Smith & Brown. I should mention that by the time that I'd gone to Napier and worked for Taylor's Dry Cleaners, I'd also sort of caught up with Betty. I wasn't all that popular with her at that particular time, and I'd sort of say hello and she would just walk straight past, type of thing.
Was actually whistle.
Oh, yeah, Whistler.
And I thought cheeky devil, so I just kept strutting
down the street. You worked somewhere near one another, did you?
She was in the Napier Hospital.
You're a nurse, were you? Mm. Oh, okay, so you whistled a nurse. Sacre bleu.
Yeah, I got the treatment I deserved, so that was that. And anyway, after going with work with Smith & Brown for a while, we finally met up together again. And then we got married in September of 1963.
All right, well, we'll find out about Elizabeth Kyle now, where your folks came from and where things happened.
Okay. Right, now on my dad's side, they came up to New Zealand at the end of 1840, although some said it was 1841, so I'm not too sure. And my maiden name was Simons. It was my great-great-grandfather that came out in 1840-41, and I think they may have left England in 40 and arrived here in 41, but I'm just not quite sure. And I've had a relation who's since died, but she got into the archives down in Wellington and has a lot of agenda on it.
I noted that Betty's name was Elizabeth Kyle. It in fact it is Elizabeth Kyle Simons.
Now anyhow, I don't know how many details you need to know about him, but when his parents got married, it's my dad's parents, which was in 1900, they lived in Kahuratai, which is near Wongamomina, and they had a farm there, built a beautiful big homestead there, and they had three children. My dad was the second born in 1907, and anyhow they lived there for a number of years. His mother was a nurse. She had trained at the Auckland Training School in the 1890s, in the days when you had to pay to be a nurse, and she used to go out at night time, daytime, all sorts of times, delivering babies and nursing sick people and everything from home, just for love, not for money, and to help people out in that very remote area. And anyhow, Dad went to school there, first of all in a little school that his father and grandfather built on their property, because none of the children around there, they had to travel a quite a big distance, and I don't know whether it was to Wongamomina or where they had to get to, but it was quite a hike. So they built this little school, and then later on a lot of the parents got together and they built a much bigger school, and I'm not quite sure where that was, but I have got a book there and I must look at the detail. Anyhow, to cut a long story short, when my dad was, I'm not quite sure how old, he might have been about 10 or 11, I don't know, but his mother developed peritonitis, and it was rather sad that a nurse should have an appendix that seemed to develop very quickly into peritonitis. They didn't realise at the time that's what it was, that it was that bad, but they got a message to Stratford, and a doctor came out on a motorbike, visited my grandmother, and arranged for a train to come from Stratford all the way as far as it could get to that area, and they took her with horse and buggy etc. to the station and managed to get her back to Stratford Hospital, but by that time her appendix had burst and she was a really sick lady. But anyhow, they managed to save her life, but she was never quite the same, you know, health-wise again following that. and the doctor, or I think Dad's father, decided that it was too dangerous living out there, you know, too far away from help. So they sold up their farm and they moved to New Plymouth temporarily, and then they decided they'd come over to Hawke's Bay. So they settled here in the well before the 1920s. It might have been about 1916, 17, 18, something like that. I'm not quite sure really.
Sure.
And initially they lived on Napier Hill, but they wanted some land, so they rented the house on the hill out and bought some land out at between Tiawonga and Hamoana, and they ran a chicken farm there. It was really an egg farm, and they used to put eggs on the train every day. They were really special eggs, lovely free-range ones, as they were back then, and they used to be sent down to Wellington on the train every day. Quite amazing.
I have a Fonga mum and a passport.
Oh, you do, do
yes,
you?
Yes.
Oh, did you go over there to the special weekend?
No, I've been through there two or three times, and both times it was the time they were issuing passports. I thought, why not? This is pretty important stuff.
Oh, that's neat. I had quite a few other relations living in that area. Anyhow, that's sort of the Simons. Oh, I suppose you want to hear what happened to my dad later, do you? Because
oh,
that's
yes,
all history.
Yes.
Anyhow, sadly, my grandfather fell over not long. Oh, it was before the 31 earthquake, and they were still living out at Tiawonga, and he tripped over something and fractured his femur, and they put him into hospital, and sadly, he died a few days later of hypostatic pneumonia, because back then they used to have him lying flat and
right.
Would, you know.
Yeah.
And I think his lungs might have been weakened, being over in Taranaki and the climate, and they'd broken all this huge amount of area for farming. It was a pretty hard life. And they milked cows, and he employed staff to help milk cows by hand back then and everything. But anyhow, so things weren't so good by that time, because my grandmother wasn't well following having had that peritonitis, and the grandfather had gone, and so they tried to sell the farm out there, but then the depression came. That's right, that's what it was. And that had a huge effect on people not being able to sell properties or get good prices for properties and all the rest of it. Anyhow, they went and lived in Napier up on the hill, and then of course it was a 31 earthquake a bit later. My grandmother was still alive then, probably only just. And my aunt actually threw her out the window, out through the bedroom window, when the earthquake started shaking, because they had a great big tall dresser thing in that main bedroom. And my aunt had just managed to get her out through the window, and the whole big thing fell over and it landed on the bed. So, I mean, isn't that luck? Wonderful, good luck. And their house did, it all shifted off the piles and everything, and the chimneys all came down.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise they were able to, you know, they'd put it back to where it started off from. It wasn't destroyed totally. And then my younger aunt, my dad had two sisters, an older sister and a younger sister. It was the older sister that saved my grandmother. The younger sister had just started her nursing training at Napier Hospital. Her name was Kirstine. And she'd only been there for a very short time when the earthquake hit. And that's quite a story in itself. But anyhow, she survived the earthquake, but she saw the nurse's home all shaking down, falling down over the road. And there was a surgeon operating in the theatre just near where she'd been posted in women's surgical. And the surgeon came staggering up, and that they took the patient that they were operating on outside. And he said to her, "I can't finish sewing or fixing up this lady. I've got no shoes," because in theatre, you know, they still do today,
right.
They have those cloth things on. So he looked at my aunt's feet, and she had rather large feet, and he said,
"Can I
have your shoes, please?" So anyhow, she kindly gave him her shoes, so then she was running around in stockinged feet. And my father was working, he was an electrician, or was an electrician, and he was working on a great big new church that they had just finished building in Napier, and he was up doing the wiring with another Sparky, and the earthquake came, and he quickly got down that ladder and out that door so fast. But the thing was, the building didn't fall down, but it burnt down, sadly, in the fire. That was quite amazing. Dad's been mentioned a few times over the years in different earthquake things. Anyhow, Dad was in the army doing all that sort of stuff. They do mounted rifles and things like that. But before the war started, he'd set up his own electrical business over in Tarradale. And you may have heard that was Carl Simons Electrical, who my brother Robbie took over later when Dad retired. And now our son Peter, he has been managing it for a few years.
So it's still going?
So it's still going. It's still in the family. But now he's just actually, it's kind of pretty much, I won't say it's completely folded up. They've still got a base over there. But Pete's now working from Hastings, and they have another office over here, and he's got the electrician doing the Tarradale work, and things have just changed quite a lot. So I suppose that's, my mum, that's another story. Her family came out here in dribs and drabs, I suppose. They came from England, from Cornwall, and her mum's side did. But her father's side came from Scotland. And anyhow, my mum's name was Nancy Fisher, and her mother's name was Lolly Baker, and the Baker family came out and settled at Puketapu back in 1886, I think it was. Anyhow, my grandmother was the firstborn, Lolly, and she married my mum's dad, and his name was Harry Fisher. He was a fisher, and my mother was a baker. Well, my grandmother was a baker, so a fisher married a baker. And the interesting thing was, my grandfather, who was called Fisher, Harry Fisher, turned out to be a baker by trade. Oh, he was the first Pākehā child to be born in the square in Palmerston. It must have been a private hospital here or something, but I don't know. And then he ended up, they opened up a bakery in Napier. And I don't know how many years they had that for, the Fisher family. Not terribly many years, I don't think. And then my grandfather went to Wellington, but prior to that he went to Scotland and did a fine baking, very intricate baking course over there, making special, bread and cakes and learning how to ice cakes and do all the fancy stuff. And he opened up his own bakery down in Wellington when he came back. And I think that might have been either late 1800s or early 1900s. And he married my grandmother, Lolly Baker, I think about 1909, or it might have been a bit before that, it might have been 1907, I'm not sure. Anyhow, she inherited the family property, or more or less inherited it, at Puketapu, and she used to use that as a little holiday retreat. And my grandfather kept on with the bakery for quite a number of years, and then during the First World War, they wanted him to be on the ship that was out in the, not Pacific, but I think it was in the Atlantic. And it was the one sort of out there, I don't know quite what it did exactly, but there were lots of Japanese boats and things around. I'm not quite sure. All I know is that he was a chef and bread maker and everything on board ship. And then, after he got married, set up that bakery down in, oh, they might have been married when he went to the war. He would have been, wouldn't he? Of course he was. That's right, while he was at war, my grandmother came back up to the Puketapu with my uncle, who was about 5 years older than my mum. And they lived in Puketapu, and my uncle started going to school at Puketapu School. And then later on, my mum must have been born. Oh, she was born in 1917, so she wouldn't have been alive then, would she, when he went away to war? What year did the war finish? 18? Yeah. But anyhow, they lived in Wellington, and then eventually, his health wasn't very good, and they moved up to Puketapu full time. And my mum had, prior to that, she'd been educated in Wellington and a little bit of schooling in Hawke's Bay, but mostly in Wellington. Same with my uncle. What else can I say? Oh, and then in about 1930, not quite sure what year, but my mum met my dad anyhow. He was actually 10 years older than her, and that's Carl Simons. And anyhow, they got married in 1939 or 1938. 38 or 39, I'm sure. And I was born in 41. I had an older sister born in 1940, and she actually died of leukemia when she was 4 and a half, which was really sad. Then I had other siblings, and we were all brought up in Tarradale, and spent quite a lot of time staying with our grandmother out at the farm, which was called The Nook, where my sister still lives today. And it's been in the family for, 116, 16, quite a long time anyhow.
Relative to the hotel, where is The Nook?
Okay, do you know Springfield Road?
Yeah.
Well, you go past that rubbish dump if you go around through the, you know,
yeah.
If you just keep going around and, you know, and it's up that Springfield Road and it's about the last house, or it's a new house now, it's gone up further down. I can't really describe it, but anyhow, it would be probably about a kilometre or a couple of kilometres from where the old rubbish dump was.
Yes.
And it's on the right and it's nestled in against a hill.
Yeah.
The sort of a cycle track that goes right round over what was my grandmother's part of her land. And I've got all my family are up here. I've got a brother with a deer farm, or he's actually up the Taupo Road with the main farm, but then he built a new house on some of the land opposite the Nook. It's about 60 acres there, I think, or something
like that.
And my sister's got the other piece, which is up against the hill, and there's a few acres there. And my other little sister and her partner, they bought a house up over the hill, so they're all sort of in a vicinity with each other. And my other brother, one other brother, Robbie, who was the one that managed Carl Simons, he's on the Terradale Sugarloaf, so they're sort of all on the land.
So you went to school where?
In Terradale, and often stayed at my grandmother's and used to get on the school bus and go from Puketapu down to Terradale School and then back there after school. And we loved staying up there because we were spoilt rotten and she'd cook special things that we loved. And yeah, so we lived in Terradale. Dad had land and we had a few sheep and a cow during the war years and chickens and ducks and all those sorts of things.
Did you play any sports?
Yes, I did. I played netball and I loved swimming. And then later on, or for quite a number of years, I skated, roller skating at Napier. No, I can't think of any other sports. Oh, I did tap dancing and things like that.
During this period, of course, you became a nurse and trained in Napier?
Yes, I started my training in 1958 at Napier Hospital. And I graduated there and I was there for 5 years, you know, as a student and then a staff nurse. And during that time, I had met Jim. This chap used to whistle out when I was walking down the street and I thought, cheeky devil, and poke my nose up in there and stalk down the street. But the thing was, I had met Jim's sister, unbeknown to me, it was his sister, she was lovely, she didn't whistle. She was a Hastings nurse, and Jo came over to Napier to do her isolation training. And anyhow, she lived in, they stayed in the home that we were in, the old home. Hastings nurses, so it was rather fun getting to know her because she was always the life of the party, or you know, the life of the nurses' home. And then later I found out that it was Jim's sister, as it turned out. But we used to have dances in the War Memorial, do you remember them?
Yes, very much so.
Okay, so Jim used to often be at those dances, so that was fine. I didn't sort of become involved at that stage, but I actually met him at a party over in Hastings with another nursing friend. Became engaged, and we went to this engagement party, and Jim just happened to be at this party, and I was with some other chap, and he said to me, I don't know what you're going out with him for. He said, you know, you should be coming out with me. Pretty cheeky.
Very subtle.
He was very positive.
So at that point then, okay, you got married, and we'll pick up the children further along, but at this stage, we'll get Jim to carry on with how he sponsored all these things you've done in life. And
yes, well, we met and then became engaged, and we got married in 1963, in September 63. And we then had three children, Peter and Michelle and Nick. And basically, when we first got married, we rented a house in Queen Street, some friends of my mother's, and it was only then that we learned from Mum that there was a house for sale in Gordon Road, and we decided that we would have a look at this place. And then at that particular point in time, I had been down to Campbell Island. I'd been down there from September through till the following October, so 13 months in all altogether. And my job down there was officer in charge, and during the summer months we had 15 men down there, and then during the winter time from March through till September there was 10 of us. And the only communication that we had at that particular point in time was basically either the American Navy or the New Zealand Navy, and they had an escort. Well, it basically was a destroyer escort, and it was stationed between us and the Antarctic just in case anybody who was flying had to ditch their plane or anything like that. So that was the reason that they were on station between us and the Antarctic. And the only other communication we had was via radio.
So what was the point of being on Campbell?
Well, basically the island was a weather forecasting station, plus also ionosphere and satellite tracking station. So that was the reason that it was manned 24 hours a day and 12 months of the year. So that was the reason for that. Just prior to going down to Campbell Island, I had also been in a fill-in job with Morrison Industries, and the factory manager at that particular point in time said to me, well, it would be a job for you here when you come back. So I then joined Morrison Industries when I arrived back in 1964, and I started on the production line assembling motor mowers at that point in time. And after a period of time assembling motor mowers, I was given the opportunity of doing a special job, and that was reorganising all of the steel section of the factory, and I was given 5 men to help me with that particular job. And then after I'd finished that particular job, the foreman of the cycle assembly department had handed in his notice, and Bill Henderson, at that time the factory manager, said to me, would I be interested in looking at that job? And of course I was particularly interested in looking at that job. So I began as a supervisor of the bicycle assembly department, and I think I had 60 odd people working with me at that time. And that went for a period of about 2 to 2.5 years, I suppose. And then from there, there was a job arose in production control. So I then became the production controller of Morrison Industries, and that was basically setting up and initiating any of the factory work that had to be done, putting job counts out of the shop floor and making sure that everything ran smoothly, that type of thing. And I'd been in that job for about 2 or 3 years, and the factory manager decided that he needed a production supervisor, so I was appointed to that position. And then in 1974, well, we bought a new factory in Adelaide, Scott Bonner, and factory manager at that time, Bill Henderson, was appointed as the factory manager in Adelaide, and so he recommended that I get the position of factory manager, and I was appointed to that particular position, and that went through the various stages and finished up as manufacturing manager, responsible for that. And then in 1986, of course, we had the problem of the share crash, and during that time we had changed ownership of the factory from the original Fletcher Challenge, and well, it was Fletcher Challenge at that point in time, and then we were sold to a merchant bank in Auckland, and at that point in time they had a number of businesses and we were the only profitable one, and with the share crash they went bung, and we then had to put on the market. And so we were, and we were sold to Massport Industries in Auckland. And at that time, we were offered a job in Auckland, but we had so many other commitments in Hastings, and of course the family were here, and also Betty's family were here. So we decided that we wouldn't go
so
to
that. So that was what year?
That was 1986-87.
I had no idea that Morrison Industries ended up as part of Massport.
Yeah, well, all of the big presses that we had, which included a 300-ton and 400-ton press, and all of those were dismantled and taken up to Massport in Auckland to continue with the pressing of the steel shells that we use for motor mower bodies. But of course, Morrison's had quite a history. It was basically started off by Sid Morrison, and from Sid Morrison, who developed one of the rotary mowers of the New Zealand industry, he started off in a garage where Powderall's old building in, I think it was the corner of Nelson Street and Eastbourne Street, from memory. So that's where he started off, and I do recall that evidently he ran into some stones, and it being a side delivery, it shot a stone across the road through somebody's window, and that certainly was a good start to things as far as motorbikes were concerned. But then he moved down to Karamu Road and had a factory down there, and then also an assembly plant just across the road. I can't remember the name of the street now. Jervois Street. So there was an assembly plant in Jervois Street. My dad also worked for Morrison's. Mm. He worked in the assembly plants in both Jervois Street and also in Omahu Road. But when Sid got to the stage where he virtually had enough, he then decided that he would sell the business, and it was taken over by J.H. Mason. From J.H. Mason, it was sold to Fletcher Challenge. No, it wasn't Fletcher Challenge, it was Wright Stevenson's. And then Wright Stevenson's became part of Fletcher Challenge, and Fletcher Challenge was also the owner of Morrison Industries. Mm. And at that point in time, they sold the business to the merchant bank in Auckland, and they wanted out of manufacturing altogether because they originally had both a multifaceted engineering place in Dunedin and also one in Lower Hutt. And they decided that they would get out of all of the manufacturing and they would concentrate on building their livestock business, which they were very, very good at, of course. Yes. So after Morrison's closed down, I was also on the city council at that stage as a councillor, and I served 3 years as a councillor in the Hastings City Council initially and then the Hastings District Council after that. So in the interim period, I had another job as the chief executive of Foldway Industries in Napier. The managing director didn't really want a chief executive because he was doing most of the work himself. So I finished up by resigning from that position and then went back to the district council to assist the general manager, or the county clerk as he was called in those days, in setting up a reconstructed Hastings district council, which consisted of Havelock North and the old county council, Hawke's Bay County Council. So I assisted with that particular job, and then he said to me, would I be interested in becoming responsible for corporate management in that, with HR and that sort of thing, and I said yes that I was, and so I spent 13 years with the district council from that point onwards, retiring in there in, what year was it, Betty? 2000?
I don't know, you have to go back. You'll be 80 this year, so that means it must have
65,
been...
65, so it must have been...
15 years ago.
So it must have been somewhere in about 2005. No,
2001.
2002. Somewhere around about there. 2001, in actual fact. These dates are somewhat confusing. So in the interim period, since retiring, I've been doing quite a bit of work as a JP and also as a marriage celebrant, funeral celebrant, and that type of thing. And we have had two or three moves. We moved from our property in Gordon Road out to Omahu Road. We had a property out there which was adjacent to the factory. And we moved from there out to Beach Road in Hamoana, and I think that was around about 1987, wasn't it?
I'm not sure, actually.
So, somewhere around about there, anyway.
Sure.
We were there for a number of years, and then we moved back into Hastings, into Usherwood Crescent, and then we moved here.
Now, during this period, you had a long association with Rotary.
Yes, I joined Rotary in 1975, I think 75, with the Stawford Lodge Club in Hastings, and we used to meet then at the DB Heratonga Hotel, and of course that's long since gone, and we moved from there to Heratonga Club, and then we moved again to the Hibernian Club, and since that time we've gone out to Number five, the golf course out at Munga Territory.
It's a bit confusing though, isn't it?
That's where we are. And so I was appointed district governor of District 994. It was 9930, or 993 in actual fact. And it was 9930 later on, but I was appointed district governor for that area. And that's 993. And Betty joined me with a training session in Dallas in Texas, and we were right in the middle of an airport, and it was quite amazing because there was one plane taking off in one direction and one plane landing in another direction, and I think that happened about every 30 seconds or something like that.
But we couldn't hear them from inside the hotel. It was remarkable.
So we then had quite a number of trips away with Rotary and that type of thing, so and that's where we are at.
So you joined in the 70s?
75.
And are you still a current?
Yes, I'm still a current member of the Sawford Lodge Club.
So you've been there for a while?
42 years or something like that, 43 years this year.
Then will you remember Trevor Page?
I do remember Trevor
He's
Page.
He's 97.
He's amazing, well, isn't he?
Trevor Page, of course, was Page Painting in
Ottawa. Yes.
And he employed my cousin's husband for 40-something years, didn't he?
All his working life,
is that
basically.
Right?
Yeah, Alan Watson. Well, it's quite amazing, actually, how some people...
Walks huge areas.
He walked up the Sugarloaf the other day.
Yeah.
He was puffing a bit.
Well, he's got a pacemaker, obviously.
So you must have got a lot of pleasure out of being part of Rotary over those numbers of years.
Yes, we have. Oh, Betty's been included in that because she's been a vital part as far as we're concerned. And she's hosted so many jolly things, that's unbelievable.
It's good, though. It gives you great satisfaction.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've just had so much out of it that I could never, ever do enough to...
Do you know, Frank, it's rather interesting because once upon a time it used to be a huge privilege to be invited to join Rotary. And unfortunately now it's something that a lot of people don't want to take on because it impinges so much on their time and that type of thing. And in actual fact, worldwide, the numbers are not increasing at all. And they haven't done for quite some time. In fact, they have receded in many cases. And the other good thing, Frank, is that they have done such huge humanitarian tasks, especially with, you know, the fact of beating polio. And now there's only a couple of countries, one Nigeria and the other Pakistan, where they've got a few cases which are reported each year, but they're running into huge problems with the likes of witch doctors and goodness knows what, so it's a real problem. But they're just about that far away from cleaning it up.
Well, as a past district governor, do you have any further involvement with RI?
No, not particularly, no. And all I do is go to the past district governor's meetings, which are not all that frequent now. They used to be every 3 months, or even a lot sooner than that in the past, but they have now been sort of put on the back burner as well, because they're only just an advisory body, more so than anything else.
Now, sports, do either of you play any... sport?
No, it sounds terrible. We don't, but we do other things. Jim walks. He goes for about a 2 kilometre walk every day, which is really good. I walk about 100 kilometres around here just doing housework and gardening. No, just kidding. I do sometimes, but I've had 2 knee replacements, and you know about knees, don't you, Frank?
Yes.
And so, you know, the doctor said, don't pound the pavement, you know, too much.
We did the Targo Rail with bikes, and that's a little while ago now, but we did quite a bit of training for that, and that was a really, really good exercise. It was 4 days and over 150k.
Now, you've got a fifth wheeler sitting in the yard. I hope you make use of that.
Yes, we have been, but we haven't been because we had a series of misfortunes, I suppose you could call it, when we went away. We were going to go to our nephew's wedding, and that was going to be in Ecuador. And we started off, we thought, well, okay, we'll head straight down to Peru, and we'll do the Hidden Valley and the Machu Picchu and all that sort of thing. And that was going to be a 2-month holiday, but unfortunately we had only been there about a day and a half, and we were involved in a horrendous car crash that put us out of circulation for about 4.5 weeks, and I was a little bit worried. I think Betty was a bit more worried than I was at that particular point in time. We had, fortunately, we had very, very good insurance, and they moved us from a sort of a mundane sort of a room to a suite at the top of the hospital, and we were in intensive care there for about 4 weeks. And then they flew us home from Cusco all the way to Napier with a doctor, and they flew us business class as well. The insurance was a great thing that you had to have. That was one of the problems that we had, but apart from that, we've been pretty good, and we've actually We did do two trips down to the South Island. There was 3 months on each occasion, wasn't there?
Mm.
And we still didn't see all of the South Island. Because the problem was, you get to some place and you think, oh, God, this is really nice.
It's idyllic.
And then you stayed and you just lost time. And that was all there was to it. We actually went away. We went up to the 8-acre Mahatania Tour, which is Tuhoi country.
It's going back a few years now.
We took a brand new caravan that we'd only just purchased from Australia. We had it built over there, and we took this in this bloody goat track, and it went through three fords, and we lost one of the feet from the back end of the stabilizers going through one of the fords, and then we found it coming out again. But that was a very interesting trip. There was no doubt about that at all.
And I think some of the members might have been laughing, thinking to themselves, it'll serve them right, taking a brand new, spanking new caravan on a rough road like that.
Now, coming back to the family, your children, we know they're all in Hastings.
Well, they are. They are at the present time. Well, our oldest one, Cheryl, she was born in 1964, and she's been married twice. But with her first husband, she had a lovely daughter, who is now age 26, and she's got one son from her second relationship, and he is now just almost 18. And her first daughter, her only daughter, Erina, she produced our very first great-grandchild. So that's rather nice. So it's now four generations, just about.
Yes.
So anyhow, we're getting a lot of joy. She's 4 months old now,
and a
little pet. And then our next son, Pete, he's 50. He's the electrician, and he was married, and second marriage actually, and his second wife died from a brain tumour about 3 years ago, which was really sad. Peter has one daughter, Gria, and she's now 18, and she's just gone into childcare, that's her chosen profession.
Sure.
And the young one, Caleb, or he's not the young one, but he's a few months younger than Gria, it's Michelle's second one. We've only got three grandchildren. He's applied to go in the Navy, but at the present time, he won't be able to go in until June, so he's sort of full in time. His father is a builder, and so he's actually employing Caleb to work for him in the interim period, which is really good.
Yep.
He's picking up a few building tips and things, so it'll come in handy later.
Mm.
But he wants to go into the engineering side, I think, in the Navy, so it's his choice.
Yes.
What can I say about them? Oh, our daughter Michelle, she's a beauty therapist and she works from home in Hastings. She did have a business in Karamu Road, but she decided that she preferred to live from home.
Mm.
And she has exchange students staying at her place, which is good, you know, very interesting. So that's her, and that's about it, really. Oh, Nick, I forgot about our baby.
Oh,
my goodness. He's 41. Just turned 41, and he's had an interesting life. He was in England for about more than 12 years, I think, all up. He managed a hotel down on Bear Island, which is a very interesting place. It's off the coast of Devon, and it was bombed during the Second World War, and it's got this amazing hotel on it, which is, you know, badly damaged. Yes. Agatha Christie wrote books there, and they made a film there. And you can actually see that whole thing. You can pick it up on the net, can't you?
Yes, you can.
If you want to check Burr Island out, it's Burr Island. It's at a place called
Big Bury on Sea.
And it's just amazing.
It's an amazing place to get to, too, because the roads are so narrow and so deep, because they're the original cart tracks that they had, and they've just been furrowed right the way down, all the way through.
Yes.
And now you have to have a passing space about every 400 or 500 metres. And it was quite amazing how many people were terrible, especially with caravans. unbelievable.
Anyhow, you go to Exeter, and then you go out to the coast from there. So it's about, it depends on the traffic, probably about an hour's trip, isn't it, to get there. Nick is also he was managing a hotel there, and then Jim wasn't very well, so he decided he'd come home about 3 years ago. And he was doing some troubleshooting, and he sorted out a hotel, the Tennyson Inn in Napier. And then from there he went to Mangapapa, And he was there for not even 2 years, was he? Japanese had taken over the ownership of it a few years ago, and it was all falling to pieces.
Mm.
Well, he tried to get that place sorted out, and it actually wore him out in the end. It was just...
Well, he was having trouble with the Japs as well.
Oh,
yes.
No. They weren't forthcoming. It was only about a 2-star when he went there.
Yeah,
he got it back up to where it should have been, but he got out of it.
Nick reckoned that they were just using that as a money laundering operation anyway. So
it sounds like Frank knows all about it.
Well, only because we used it, and our company used to use it as well for functions. One of the managers that did a runner, she was a member of our Rotary Club. I've known Mangapapa myself. It was a derelict when the Watty family took it over. The house was really on its knees.
The way they built it up. And of course, James and Lady Watty, they didn't live in the place anyway. They lived in separate quarters.
So, can you think of anything else? We've covered just under 170 years of history. They haven't been sitting around idle during that time, have they?
They haven't.
Okay, if you don't think of anything else, if that's it.
No, well, that's fine. I think the only thing that I think I would like to do, perhaps, Frank, is to give you a summary of times, because obviously there's a couple of times that I've said that aren't quite correct in those particular ones. So perhaps if you can just alter those dates, that would bring it more up to date than perhaps it is at present time.
Jim had some other interests he didn't tell you about either. Like, he's passionate about fishing. He did have a boat at one stage, but he hasn't. He's sold that. Yeah, look at his face. That's fishing yesterday.
Because I had forgotten that Betty's sister's husband, my brother-in-law, had said to me, we're going to go out fishing. And I'd completely forgotten all about it. So that was yesterday. So that was the reason I had to call in on Monday morning and say, look, you'll have to canvas. I'm sorry.
But not only that, it was my friend's birthday yesterday, and we'd made this pre-arranged plan to go out and have a little gathering.
So I suppose it was inevitable you'd have an interest in fishing, because your family were fishers from Cornwall.
Yes, exactly.
And they turned her into a baker.
Yeah, I know.
Well, one of the interesting things is that we can actually track our family back to the 14th century. And one of the forebears was actually the Lord Mayor of London.
They weren't responsible for the demolition of the Anglican Church Catholic Church?
Don't think so. I don't think so.
No.
He also had a beach house up at Mahia, and we used to use that an awful lot until the kids got sick of it and Betty got sick of it. And
well, I mean, we loved it up there. It was just that it was high maintenance and, you know, and you go off in different directions and the children wanted to go and explore.
There's other things that they'd like to do now.
So fishing, were you any good at it?
Oh, very, very good indeed, believe you me. And I've got all the rods out there to prove it.
So yesterday, did you bring home the bacon or the fish?
We brought home the fish, and we finished up by catching something like about 45 gurnet, and so many kawai we were just hooking them and throwing them back. We also got 2 trevally and 2 snapper and 2 blue cod.
But then they had to share it all amongst them, because some didn't do as well as others,
so that works well.
Well, we go out with Brian. All of the fish were filleted on the way back, and the boat was cleaned on the way back.
So you put it in at Napier?
Napier. He's got a permanent berth over at the yacht club at Napier, and we just go out from there, and once we've set sail for home, it's a clinker built, big one, but 30 feet, and we just clean the fish on the way home and make sure it's clean and fresh and everything else, and then the boat's scrubbed down, so the time we get back, it's already divided and off we go.
Are there any other sports that you haven't confessed to?
Well, I used to play rugby, and I played for a number of years for Celtic in Hastings, but I'm not a golfer. I don't profess to being a golfer. I'm quite a mean hand with pool or billiards and that sort of thing.
Enjoyed scuba diving.
I really did enjoy that. Yes. That was fantastic. Yeah.
Well, let's hope there's many, many years of fishing and all those other exciting things we do when we retire. So I think that's probably just about it. So thank you, Betty and Jim, for a lovely look into your history. I'm sure at some stage or other your great-grandchildren or friends or someone will listen to your voices talking about the yesterdays. So thank you.
Thank you, Faye. Thank you very much for your interview.